The sunrise next morning was sudden, the night dissolving into day in a matter of minutes as the engorged red orb rose in the rad-blasted sky. Jack was on watch and woke the others as the light infused the atmosphere.
Eat, then go, yeah? Make good ground before sun hot.
Sure, Jack.
After they had breakfasted on their rations and taken as much water as they could to keep them going until their next break, they packed the tents and were ready to leave.
Let's hope we don't have any more problems today.
Don't be such a baby, Danny. We just keep our eyes open and deal with what comes. No more, no less, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
Lonnie took his bearings with the mini-sextant, and they began the long march to Charity. At present, although they were exposed, there was enough space around them for any distant wags to be spotted long before they'd be spotted on foot. So it was safe for them to march in the open, although they all kept watch for any activity on the horizon, and for any shelter that might be close enough to provide them with shade from the burning sun as they rested. The march was tedious, and although they tried to keep alert, it was all too easy to fall into the stupor of following the beat of their footsteps and walking and thinking to that rhythm, and that rhythm alone. The only one of the party who avoided this was Jack. The albinotine's hunting senses told him to keep alert. Something was warning him that there was danger ahead, but he couldn't tell what that danger might be. As he walked, he kept all his senses on triple red, his eyes scanning the horizon and to all sides. At one point, keeping their distance to an extent that he wasn't sure whether they were wild dogs or cats of some kind, there had been a pack that seemed to trail them for a while. Then the pack had simply disappeared. But Jack knew that creatures that took the time and trouble to track didn't just disappear. They faded into the shadows and bided their time. So where was the pack now? Holed up somewhere, waiting? He couldn't hear or see them, but he knew they were there. They had been marching for a little over 3 hours without a break when Lonnie held up a hand and stopped them. The line had straggled out a little over the past few miles, with 50 yards between Lonnie and Dean.
Okay, I figure we need a rest and a water break. See that crop over there? I reckon that'll give some shade. Come on.
Lonnie turned and began to walk northeast of their chosen path, deviating slightly to reach a small outcrop about half a mile away. The rest of the group followed, except Jack. The albino waited until the last of the group, Danny, inevitably, had passed him, and then Jack stood facing the rocks. He slowed his breathing, filtering out the sounds of his own nervous system and concentrating everything he had on the rocks ahead. He couldn't hear much other than the noises his companions were making, but there was something underlying that he could barely make out. A scrabbling noise. He could see nothing, but his eyesight was impaired by the bright light. He sniffed the air, and was certain that there was something lurking in the shelter of the rocks, something musky and animal, something more than one or two in number. A pack, in fact, to judge from the confusion of odors that underlay the scent of the wreck party. So these things were waiting for the wreck party in the shadows and shelter of the rock, and the unsuspecting party was heading straight for them. Jack was a few paces behind by now, and his lagging back had been noticed. Both Danny and Dean had turned to question him. Danny was clueless, but Dean knew the albino hunter well enough to realize that something was seriously wrong. Even as Dean watched, Jack sprang into action. He began to sprint toward the front of the party. He knew he couldn't yell, as the noise and the tone of his voice would alert the waiting creatures that something was wrong, and yet he couldn't let Lonnie walk into a trap. The sound of Jack's feet pounding on the hard desert surface alerted the wreck party leader that something was amiss.
What?
It was then that Dean made a serious error of judgment.
Watch out! Something's wrong!
As soon as the first syllable escaped Dean's lips, Jack changed his tactics. Knowing that the creatures would now be alerted, the albino hunter drew his .357 Magnum Colt Python.
Waiting behind rock!
Lonnie began to turn back to the rocks, shrugging his H&K into position with practiced ease. What he saw made him freeze for a vital moment. In that time, the creatures were upon him. They were wildcats, with long fur that was matted and in some places bald, the pale gray skin showing through. A few of the cats showed white patches or touches of ginger in their coloring, which en masse just made the whole carpet of fur seem more amorphous and sinister. The air was rent asunder by the sounds of a hungry pack in full cry. These were creatures in a feeding frenzy. From the look of them, They hadn't fed well for some time, and now they saw their opportunity. For a moment, the entire wreck party, apart from Jack, was frozen in awestruck horror. It was fortunate for their collective well-being that Jack had his wits fully about him and was focused, as always, on survival. Taking a combat firing stance to one side of Lonnie, the H&K still frozen in his hands, Jack raised the cold python and fired into the pack. He aimed for the center of the front ranks as they poured off the rock and onto the desert floor. The powerful hand blaster cut a swath through the front ranks of the cats, ripping through thin flesh, splintering bone, and turning organs into a bloody mush. A couple of the cats took a full impact in their heads, skulls exploding in a shower that adhered to the matted coats of the animals around them. It stopped the cats for a fraction of a second as confusion spread through the pack, the smell of death hitting them strongly. Their collective purpose was for a moment lost as they scattered. The sound of Jack's gun was enough to shake the wreck party from the stunned inaction that the sight of the cat pack had caused.
Nuke shit! Chill up!
Lonnie began firing with his H&K. Mick and Tilly also opened up with their blasters. Tilly with an Uzi, and Mick had an H&K like Lonnie. Danny showed his ineptitude in yet another inopportune moment by jamming his Uzi as he began to fire.
Oh, fuck me!
He fiddled awkwardly with the blaster while Dean stepped back to cover him, concentrating on precision shooting with the Browning high power that would keep the pack well back from them.
Come on, Danny, get your shit together!
I'm trying, Dean, I'm trying! God damn it!
Doc, on the other hand, was more than able to do some serious damage. The older man stepped forward, his eyes glittering with anger, as though the attack of the cats was in some way a personal affront. It would have been baffling to the others if they had noticed, but to Doc, it truly was a personal matter. In his head, Doc was no longer standing in the middle of the New Mexico desert after Skydark, but was in his backyard in Vermont, some 200 years before. Young Jolyon was standing to one side of him.
Daddy, a cat got my arm!
The young boy's arm had been scratched hideously by a feral cat that had wandered from the nearby woods, the same creature that had been responsible for the death of Rachel and Joyon's pet cat Matilda a few days before.
Nothing to fear, my son.
That wildcat had been killed with a single shot from the Remington that Doc kept in the house for emergencies.
Damned rabid beast.
Young Joyon, whom he would never see again, and who had probably died well over a century before, and may never even have seen adulthood for all Doc knew. All of these things went through Doc's mind as he stepped forward and fired the shot chamber of the Lama. The shot from the percussion blaster spread through the pack, ripping into them and generating high-pitched and terrible yells of pain as more of the animals were wounded or chilled. But the pack had now started to disperse, which made them harder to fire upon. The cats were in a frenzy, attacking anything and everything, including each other. Driven wild with hate, hunger, and fear, they were moving erratically, running between the legs of the wreck party. Their claws and teeth attempted to scratch and bite through the tough clothing worn by all the party members.
Shit, they're feisty little fuckers!
Mick shook one cat loose from his leg and then followed through to kick another in the head as it tried to leap at him, the force of his combat boot dislocating the animal's jaw, so that it sagged uselessly as the creature hit the ground.
Yeah! Watch jaws, though!
Hearing this, Dean took a closer look at the creature that approached him before taking a shot that cleaved the head of the creature. As it came toward him, he noted that the cat's jaws were slightly enlarged to accommodate its large fangs, which dripped with a viscous fluid. This was something Doc needed to hear and take heed of, but the older man was no longer in the New Mexico desert.
Harm my child, you pernicious and ugly beast. Nothing can come between me and my family ever again. Not even a mangy scrap of fur like you. Do you hear me?
He tried to fire again at a cat making directly for him, but the Lama had discharged both the ball and shot chambers, and the hammer clicked on a dead charge.
Eternal damnation!
Holstering the pistol with one hand, Doc decided on a more hands-on approach. As the cat leapt at him, the old man thrust out his free hand, and with a display of expert timing, he caught the beast by the throat in mid-leap.
Kill my dearest Rachel and Matilda, do you? You hideous abomination!
Drool and viscous fluid dripped from the feline's powerful jaws. Its body writhed and twisted with preternatural strength as it sought to free itself, a strength matched by Doc's own maddened grip. Its front paws lashed, the back legs coming up as it squirmed, kicking at him with sharpened claws.
Back to hell where you belong, Cerberus!
Tanner's grip tightened, then squeezed. The cat's neck broke.